This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You know
it's Taz and Moose. Hey. It's a Friday. It is Taz and the Moose with you right here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. You've got Pete and Dan across the way. Belletti with your updates. Bogus sitting in with me in for Taz, who is out. It is Mark Melusis, Taz and the Moose. 3 hours we go with you right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time. 6 Pacific, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 is your number to call to get involved. What's going on, Bogus? How you doing, brother?
Moose, it begins. No more Taz and Moose for the rest of 2018.
That's so exactly right.
Some combination of me and one of you.
Yes.
Basically the rest of the way now.
It is. I know. You're going to be doing a lot of shows the rest of the way.
Until Christmas, then I'm out of here.
Then you're out. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Important enough to take that week off between Christmas. Oh, that's not even true. I'll be here the last, because Taz is going to be here. So someone's got to babysit Taz at the end of the year.
Yes, so you'll be here then. Yeah, so, yes. So look forward. A lot of good sports talk coming your way. I mean, as we do here, as is the custom, as we do here each and every day on CBS Sports Radio. But, yes, welcome aboard and get used to the voice, because Bogus is going to be sliding over from just doing updates to hosting, which he has done before and tons of times before. No?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of me, a lot of Brad Heller, a lot of Marco Belletti.
Mm. There you go. Always great to see Marco. Always great to see Brad. So, good times.
Everybody using their new Tumblr this morning? Yes?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I at least it's by my sink to be washed.
I washed already. It's in my locker.
It's here already.
Yeah, it's in my locker.
So you've at least that step to actually bring it back.
I washed it and brought it back. It is here.
Okay, I'm impressed. Tess, thanks you. He's in my ear.
I'm sure he has. Yes, I'm sure he will. All he talked about was the Tumblr yesterday. No?
I loved it.
I'm not going to, but I'm just saying it was a huge topic of conversation.
And as I said to Pete this morning, in somewhat of an upset, it didn't have a Taz or Taz and Moose logo on it.
No, it did not.
Which I expected.
Right. Well, you can only do so much in so little time. So there you go. It's not like he had the entire month of December. Anyway, we got the Thursday night game last night that went the Titans' way over the Jaguars 30-9 as Derrick Henry, the former Alabama star, had himself a night, has the 99-yard touchdown run equaling Dorsett's touchdown run, tying the NFL record. He runs for 238 yards and the 4 touchdowns. As you know, the Jaguars continue to show that, you know, they have, aside from the Steeler game, little to no care whatsoever about what's going on. I know they played well last week against the Indianapolis Colts as well, and that's fair. But last night down in Tennessee, it looked like they wanted no part of playing. You know, and if you want to compare touchdown runs, you know, the Dorsett touchdown run when he was with the Dallas Cowboys was when he broke through the line of scrimmage, it was basically a foot race the rest of the way. When you look at Derrick Henry, and he certainly did not have the speed of Tony Dorsett, there were three guys that had an opportunity to tackle Derrick Henry that just did not tackle him and missed the tackle. And now, I don't know what to say about Jacksonville anymore. You know, they replaced the quarterback and put Cody Kessler in, put Bortles on the bench. They fired the offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett. We know it's been a completely lost season when you look at Leonard Fournette, whether it be the hamstring injury or the suspension after the fight up in Buffalo against the Bills. They're one of the great disappointments that we have seen in recent memory in the National Football League of what they were supposed to be and what they are, especially on defense. And I continue to point back to that Cowboy game earlier on in the regular season. And last night was another perfect case in point. And that's the, you know, it's great having Thursday night football when there are intriguing matchups. I mean, last night was a doozy going in, and it was a god-awful football game. It really was. I mean, the Titans, if you're a Tennessee fan, you were happy. But if you're not a Titan fan and you're just an NFL fan, that was an impossible game to watch. It really was. It was a terrible game.
Can we just be done with the Jaguars in general? I've had enough. I'm sure everybody else basically has. They apparently have had enough of themselves, I think, this year, too. But, you know, it was a bad game, but at 7-2, as weird as the score was, the pick, the safety, they're driving down the field again. They get near the goal line. They get points there, and the game is completely different. They don't get in. The third down pass where Kessler rolled out right should have been a touchdown. He had two different guys open in the end zone that he couldn't connect with. Then they don't get the fourth down. Then Henry's 99-yard run, and we're off and going. The game changed there.
It did.
And the Jaguars had no, and that was it. That was their basically their last breath in that game last night.
Well, but that also
was that
shows
one little
you,
sequence.
You're right about that, and it's a great point. It's the turning point of the game, but the problem you have is that just shows you the lack of intestinal fortitude for a Jaguar team. And I had no issue with them going for it on fourth down, and you're right in terms of them. How that flipped the script of the game early on. But I just thought overall, I mean, I really did. I have little to no confidence week in and week out with Jacksonville. And I just had, going into that game last night, I thought Tennessee was going to win. I didn't think they'd win the game 30-9, but that ended up being the final. And what it shows you about Jacksonville, Andrew, is that once one thing doesn't go their way, there's not a lot of backbone there to push back. And you didn't see anything last night. You saw next to nothing. Once it started to flip and go the Titans' way, the game was pretty much over. Because after that Henry touchdown run, you could basically see the will of the Jacksonville Jaguars leave that stadium as Derrick Henry was crossing the goal line.
Well, and then, you know, to be honest, when it was still 30-2 or whatever in the second half, I got some beauty sleep. So I woke up this morning and watched the end of the game, and saw a new clip just now, too, on the TV to remind me, two different times late in the game, it's 39 at this point, and the Jaguars are making tackles defensively inside the 10 on Henry and getting up and celebrating.
Yes.
Miles Jack one time knocked him out of bounds, and you can hear him on the crowd mic or the field mic whooping it up. And then Jalen Ramsey makes a tackle and gets up and starts flexing, and Taylor Lewan comes over and headbutts him. Well, how in the world are, after this entire season, and then that game last night, it's 39, you're getting your butt kicked, the game is over, then you make a play, and you're going to get up and start
Well, but
and
they're
start
not the only
that?
Example you see
no,
that
I know,
in the regular
but
season. But
oh,
yeah.
I know, but,
yeah,
what,
I agree
but really,
with
them?
I know. I'm not. Listen, I don't think there's any need for it. But, yeah, I mean, you saw last night, it's nonsense. What's the point of celebrating? All you have to do is look up at the scoreboard. You're getting your rear end kick. There's no reason to be celebrating late in that game when you're down 30-9 for doing your job and making a tackle.
Even just doing your job, you got to know the situation. There's no celebrating anything. To celebrate that you're not going to be blowing me out more because I just made a tackle near the goal line, it's ludicrous. And you're right. They are far from the first team, the only team to do it. But I just, it's amazing to me how these guys can have no self-awareness of what's going on. And shouldn't be surprised with them in particular this year. But that's the last image of that game last night, them celebrating a meaningless tackle
yep.
after getting their butt whooped. I mean, again, just enough with them this year. Fast forward to next year. We'll figure out where they're going, who's their quarterback, who's their head coach. But enough of them right now.
Well, I mean, but those are interesting, especially when you look at the quarterback scenario and when you look at the head coach, those are, interesting talking points for Jacksonville. It's amazing where they were supposed to be and where they are right now. And you can't roll back if you're trying to win next year, you can't roll back. Certainly, Cody Kessler's not the answer. We
no.
all know Blake Bortles is not the solution at the quarterback spot. I could have told you that a year ago, and they should not have. They should not have reinvested in Blake Bortles, but they, as an organization, decided to do so. And now you can look at the coaching of Doug Marrone this year and seriously call into question exactly what he has as a head coach as well. Everyone was throwing bouquets at his feet last year when the team was winning, and rightfully so. This season has gone so bad; the wheels have come off so much. That if you're Marrone, I'd be a little bit fearful about maybe this organization deciding to go in another direction following this season, because they were in the AFC Championship game last year. And I do know, Bogish, that last week, or was it 2 weeks ago now, that Tom Coughlin met with the media and took a lot of the blame and said, We thought we were fixing our problems, the ones we had. Other problems obviously reared their ugly head. We got to go back to the drawing board after this season. This is not just roster issues. This is also coaching issues and getting the team to play. Because anytime you see some of the nonsense that you saw last night, it shows you maybe that Marrone doesn't have the ear of this team. And I'd be a little concerned if I was Marrone being the head coach of this team after the season.
Yeah, I find myself.
Because
and
it's so bad.
No, it's. I mean, it's so bad. And it's also, to me at least, worth pointing out that, you know, sometimes teams that have expectations going into a season, it never works. And, like, they're doomed from day one. And things are just going, you know, going against them. They fall apart. There's no recovery from them. And it's never worked. This team smacked the Patriots in the face to confirm, we thought, in week two, what they were coming off of last year. They were 3-1.
Yeah.
And now up until, you know, last Sunday, they didn't win again until last Sunday. And then last night happened. So they were the Jags we thought they were for September. But once October got here, it's been an utter disaster. And I've never thought that Doug Marrone was a quality head coach. I had to change my mind a little bit because they were so damn impressive and so close last year to getting to the Super Bowl. I still find myself a little bit leaning more towards defending him than going back to my original kind of anti-Doug Marrone stance because we've seen them do it. Like, we saw them be the second-best team in the AFC last year.
We
saw
did.
Them destroy the Steelers in Pittsburgh, not by winning 6-0, by scoring a ton of points with a lot of defense mixed in.
Right, and then, but that, I mean, the offense, you credit, you know, Nathaniel Hackett, and a lot of praise was going Hackett's way last year, and he's now been fired.
Right, which is also the confusing thing now, is that to me the bigger issue is that they are far and away from their defensive personality, that's just completely fallen apart.
Well, it's gone, and that
yet you fire him.
But I also think that ended in the Cowboy game. When they go down to Dallas and get their doors blown off, and there was no adjustment as that game went along to what the Cowboys were doing, that big bad Jaguar defense got castrated. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So I you're right. I mean, the defense has been a problem. When that's been the staple in the backbone, everyone says, well, you haven't been able to run the football, and I know the injuries along the offensive line, and I know the two tackles being banged up. There's been a cavalcade of issues. So if you want to rationalize it out and say, okay, well, I'm going to bring Doug Marrone back because this season just went completely sideways. It's not going to be that way next year. And he already showed us the ability to get us to an AFC championship game. I can make that argument. But I also think you'll learn a lot about a coach when you have these kind of a year, this kind of a season, where you do have injuries, where you do have a down performance. Just what does the team do on the football field? You might not be a winning team, but is the effort, the consistent effort, is it there? Does the team look like they're in the best position to possibly be successful? And I don't know if I can make that argument with Doug Marrone.
No,
I think
can't.
He's a great head coach. Now, people might say it might be unfair, Andrew, to fire Marrone after one bad year after going to the AFC Championship game last year. And for that, I think in all likelihood, Tom Coughlin probably retains Doug Marrone as head coach. But I don't know if that's necessarily the right decision.
No, and we may be, you know, you may come down to a thought about firing him maybe a little too soon as opposed to too late if
right.
this
do
continues
it, do what
into
the Patriots
next
do.
Year.
Right, do it. Get rid of a guy a year early instead of a year late.
But my reflex is to not fire him, but to make changes all around him. But your point is maybe the most significant one. Other teams have dealt with injuries and dealt with inconsistent performances and dealt with guys not living up to expectations and have at least found a way to compete, to be committed week to week, to avoid drama, to keep their you-know-what together, and this team hasn't. I mean, it has come apart at the seams, and every single possible flaw has been exposed, and there appears to really have been no plan B. They couldn't get around Fournette's injury. Then he comes back and misses a game because he's fighting. Then the defense, you know, they can't shut up. Then they get punched in the face a few times, and then you can't get a word out of them. I mean, they're just an absolute utter mess. But, you know, as I sit here today, my first thought is not, and I'm surprised by it, it's not fire the head coach. I don't know what that initially fixes.
Well, they got to get a quarterback. I mean,
that's the first thing.
I mean, the first thing that they have to do, and that is a difficult thing to do. It is a win-now team. they come back. A lot of that defensive personnel is going to come back. You hope the offensive line stays healthy. You hope Leonard Fournette hamstring and all the other BS is a thing of the past in 2019. They've got to find themselves a quarterback because you cannot. I'm sorry. The one thing, if you want to bring Doug Marrone back, that's fine. I can understand it. The one thing, Andrew, you cannot roll back with Blake Bortles.
No, but even that, here I am defending them again. Like, what were they supposed to do last year when it seemed like he finally, and I'm not arguing against you, I'm just thinking out loud in their defense here, like, it looked like they had finally figured out a way to be successful, that he was going to be able to have this job. And
but did they, I mean, wasn't the line so fine for them? And I get the points that they scored in Pittsburgh. And that Steeler team, I would still make the argument they were looking ahead. I mean, Le'Veon Bell was even tweeting about it. They were looking ahead to the New England Patriots. They had little to no respect for the Jaguars coming into town that game. Listen, and give Jacksonville credit. They responded. They played great. They were great offensively. Nathaniel Hackett was fantastic calling plays. But wasn't the line so fine with Bortles, the style that they were asking him to do? You got to be a dominant ground game, got to have a dominant defense, and he's going to throw off the pass. Now, I know he was successful throwing it against Pittsburgh, but it was almost like the Sanchez effect with the Jets when they were winning. You know, if he throws less, I think the number at that stage for Sanchez was like 24 pass attempts. If it was under 24 pass attempts, the Jets won.
Right.
If it was over 24 pass attempts, the Jets lost. It was almost similar in nature. There wasn't that hard, fast number for Bortles, but it was almost very similar in nature. We're going to win by minimizing the quarterback. Isn't that difficult, next to impossible, to consistently do in the NFL?
Yeah, but like, I can split the argument. Like, on one hand, the big picture is you don't want to live in a Blake Bortles world. You want to do everything you possibly can to have Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Philip Rivers. Like, you, I will go to my grave saying that you can't overpay for a quarterback.
Okay.
But in the particular example of last year and last offseason and how that last season ended, they were in a spot where they felt comfortable with him as opposed to their other alternatives. Where they were picking in the draft, they were not getting a transcendent quarterback. There was no, and we've seemed to be right in that the Vikings not missed on Kirk Cousins, but giving Kirk Cousins a relative blank check in the Kirk Cousins world might not have been the best investment either. To get back in bed with Blake Bortles made the most sense in the moment of last year and in their last offseason when it was time to make a decision. But now we're back to before that, when he was crap. I mean, and that's basically what he is. Now, last year seems to be aberration more than reality, and they've gotten burned by it. And here they are again needing to do something about the position.
And they can't get burned again.
No, that can't get burned again.
You can't get burned again. Now, you look at this year, if you're going to take anything, if you're Jacksonville, away from this year, you've got to realize that you do not have the quarterback. It is a quarterback-driven league. You've got to find someone to fill that opportunity and fill that job. And a guy that I would look at would be Bridgewater, who's the backup quarterback down in New Orleans, signed the one-year deal, is going to be looking for a starting opportunity. I know there are going to be people that are going to throw Eli Manning out there.
No.
I don't think that's going to transpire, because I think Eli Manning's got a good shot to be the Giant quarterback in 2019. Bridgewater, to me, would be the guy. He'd be a marked improvement over Blake Bortles, and he's going to be a free agent, and you could offer him a job to compete for the job, and I would imagine that he would win that job.
Yeah, and you know, you'd hope that he gets in a game here late in the season, maybe week 17. Doesn't matter for New Orleans, and you can get him a couple of snaps just to see him back out there again. I mean, I'd like to just see him once in a real game.
Yeah, I get it, but that would work.
But no, I'm with you on him being atop the list of guys who are not going to be astronomically overvalued, and you don't have to give up all of your draft
Right.
stock and to go up and get even further to get in line for a quarterback.
And he's a plug-and-play guy. As long as the knee is healthy, he's a plug-and-play guy that you can bring in that's going to cost you money in free agency. Let's hear from Marrone talking about Henry's 99-yard touchdown run.
We just didn't get him down.
No, I mean, really?
There were guys around him. He's hit. He goes on. Another guy's running. Guy's running from the other side of the field. Guy's running from behind. And they just didn't tackle him. I mean, when you look at the film, that's what you're going to see.
Yeah, how about – yeah, exactly.
We saw it. I mean, it wasn't exactly Earl Campbell, but it was one of the more physically impressive runs.
It was. It wasn't Campbell, but there were – Marrone is right. there were three or four guys had an opportunity to tackle.
Well, I mean, the one guy, the second guy, Jacobs, is that his name? I can't remember now. Like, he was there. He took, like, three stiff arms.
Yes.
And then gave up.
I know.
And no one, even when they slowed him down, no one else could come and get on top and bring him down as well. I mean, that was some crazy stuff.
We talked, Andrew mentioned about the Jaguars. When they're good, you can't shut them up. Here's Jalen Ramsey.
Like I said, it was sad, honestly.
Are you still locked in?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I had limited opportunities tonight. They ran the ball. They ran the ball down our throat. Yeah. 90% of the game, they did scream. You know, we didn't. Me personally, I didn't have a lot of ops to try to make a game-changing play.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't. I don't know if there was a play to be made that was going to flip the script if you were Jalen Ramsey. Here's Derrick Henry, the former Alabama star, talking about that big touchdown run.
You know, it was so crazy because before we were in the huddle, it's like you got to break a 99-yarder. My main focus is getting positive yards. When I hacked the ball, I got it. I just seen it, and I just hit it. My stiff arms worked, so I was happy about that. But like I said, it started up front with those guys.
Oh, it did.
All of us, 11 of us, executing that play for that to happen.
Yeah, I think people say, oh, run for a 99-yard touchdown run. I think they say it in jest. I don't think they actually think that's going to happen.
And he gets points from me because he did that post-game presser in full uniform.
That's great.
That's a badass move. You show up there, you're still dirty, the jersey on, shoulder pads behind the podium, having a football conversation. I'm all in on that.
Here's Vrabel talking about his star running back.
I would say very impressive. You know, we knew we had to run the football. You know, Derek ran hard. The O-line did a great job. Coaches had him prepared. But in this league, you know, you can't block them all. You can't block every guy. So you either got to make one guy miss or you got to run him over or stiff arm or do something. And that's what Derek did.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you look at the, you know, as we begin the final quarter of the NFL season, week 14, 15, 16, 17, bogus. It's important when you look at these games, as everyone does, but especially if you're putting money down on these games, is to look at the motivation of teams.
Yeah.
The Titans were a motivated team. They're now 7-6 in the AFC. The Jacksonville Jaguars were not. All of a sudden, something goes against Jacksonville. We saw them fold up the tents. They're thinking about the offseason, where they're going on vacation, and the Tennessee Titans were able to do business. So, you know, motivation. The Titans were a highly motivated team. Vrabel, I think, at times this year, showed himself to be a good young head coach. The one thing I'd be concerned about Tennessee is Mariota, who has a penchant for turning the football over.
And that was a bad throw on the pick early.
Oh, and he underthrows guys. He's not developed into the quarterback I thought he was going to be coming out of Oregon.
The one thing I'll say, though, about Jaguar motivation, because I had not in the normal, you know, your money ways, but I had a fantasy decision for this game last night. I don't know what here's my fantasy team. But the Jaguars, like 4 days ago, they pitched a shutout against the Colts, who are the same, you know, same division, same situation, same record with the Titans, and the Jags were ready to play on Sunday, and then we got that last night. So guessing a team's motivation is awfully difficult.
But here's the one thing: on the road, Thursday night, short work week. You know, if you were playing that game last night, you were playing Tennessee. You're not going to play Jackson.
But what I couldn't figure out was whether I should play Corey Davis or not, because I didn't know how many points were going to be scored.
Your wide receiving core stinks.
This was a flex spot. Oh, this is not my wide receiver thing. But how about this? I'm playing Mikey B in our league in the playoffs.
Oh, look at you.
Derrick Henry.
Who had him?
On his bench. But when you go through it, going into yesterday.
Yeah.
If he made the decision to not play Derrick Henry as opposed to forgetting, he made the right decision because you didn't see last night coming to that extent, obviously.
No, who the hell saw 238 yards and four touchdowns? Derrick Henry, if you played him in your quarterfinal and it's playoff time in fantasy football, he's probably just going to get you right to the semifinals. I earned a bye week in my league, in my other league.
Congrats. And your other one, the one you care about, you prepped
for. Correct. The one I could actually draft my team instead of having the auto draft. Bogus is in the house. It's Taz and Moose on a Friday morning. We got a good show on tap. We got NFL picks coming your way. We'll talk a little Heisman Trophy, but coming up straight ahead, some really, really kind of sad news coming out of Washington, D.C. surrounding the Redskins starting quarterback Alex Smith. We'll get into that next It's a Friday morning right here, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right, a Friday morning. Bogus is in the house. Taz is off. Mark Melusis with you as we take you right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time. Marco Belletti, friend of the program, is in doing updates this morning. What's going on, Marco?
Hey, Moose, miss you guys.
I know.
It's been too long, man.
Yes. Now you've got full neck beard going, and away you go.
What a different dynamic when you're here as opposed to Taz, and there's a new update anchor because he is just ruthless.
Oh,
with the Heller.
Yeah.
Anyone in that chair that's, well, I mean, and me, but I mean, he just
He's usually not that nice to me either, but that's okay. Kind of goes with the program, right?
Listen, it is what it is.
I can take it. I'm a big boy.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's good to see you.
I can get your coffee. Your beard looks great.
Yeah. Well, listen.
Taz will call you Mike and tell you to leave.
How are you doing, Marco? You all right?
I've got no complaints.
Good,
yourself?
Brother. Good, man. Hang in there.
Well, Thursday Night Football, not exactly a battle of heavyweights, but we did see some history.
Mariota under center. Henry behind him. Handoff. Henry to the left. Busting out to the outside, 10-yard line, 15-yard line. Oh, a stiff arm on 15 to the 20, 25 down the sideline into territory for Jacksonville. He's still going. Henry is not going to stop. He goes all the way. 99 yards. Derrick Henry, that was magical.
The one and only Iron Eagle called Westwood 1. 99 yards ties the NFL record set by Tony Dorsett in 1983. Titans pound the Jaguars 30-9. Henry finished up 238 on the ground and 4 touchdowns. Tennessee is 7-6. They're still alive for a playoff spot in Jacksonville. A very disappointing 4-9. Now, scary note for Redskins quarterback Alex Smith. He's dealing with an infection from that gruesome leg injury he suffered. Not a lot of info on the matter. Remains in a hospital. He's dealing with obviously much bigger issues right now, but obviously his playing days, you know, could be in jeopardy. Elsewhere, the Chiefs hope to resurrect the disappointing career of Kelvin Benjamin. They agreed a one-year deal with him. KC, of course, missing a big piece in Kareem Hunt, who was released following that video that came out that showed him shoving and kicking a woman in a Cleveland hotel back in February. There was only 3 games in the NBA. Celtics got their revenge over the Knicks, 128-100. Kyrie Irving, one of 7 players in double figures. He had 22. Jazz pounded the Rockets, 118-91. It leaves them 2 games under 500 for Houston, 11-13. James Harden, just 15, couldn't shoot all night. And Houston mustered just 11 points in the third quarter, but he remains unfazed.
Heavens in basketball. Got to watch film and figure out how to get better, whether it's, you know, limited turnovers or defensively being better. We don't know yet. I'm pretty sure it's a variety of things, though.
Yeah, and obviously it's not just Melo. That wasn't the only problem in Houston. They're still struggling since they jettisoned him, who, oh, by the way, might be headed to the Lakers. We'll maybe get to that a little bit later. Blazers, they lit up the Suns 108-86. They outscored them 34-9 in the first quarter. Good to see Phoenix show up for that one. A few hot stove notes. Red Sox brought back Nathan Eovaldi. He gets 4 years, $68 million. Twins get themselves a new second baseman. Former Oriole and Dodger Jonathan Scope, 1 year, $7.5 million. And the Indians agreed to an extension with Carlos Carrasco that keeps him with the club through 2022. So now you got to wonder if it's going to be Corey Kluber or Trevor Bauer that might be on the move as the Tribe is able to lock up one of their pitchers. Guys?
All right. Thank you, Marco. Appreciate it. You mentioned it during the course of your update, and that is the news that leaked out of Washington surrounding Redskins starting quarterback Alex Smith, who we know, you know, had the compound fracture of his tibia and fibula. A couple weeks back in a home game in a loss, what ended up being a loss at home against the Houston Texans, and reportedly still in the hospital, now dealing with an infection. This coming off of the comments by their head coach, I think it was late last week, where he said that the Redskins are expecting Smith to have a full recovery and be back with the team in the next 6 to 8 months. Who knows exactly what the future is of Alex Smith right now. I saw some quotes from Adrian Peterson saying the team's been there. He's been there telling them, you know, all we could do is pray for him and support him at this stage. It was a gross, gruesome, grotesque injury, any way that you want to phrase it, Bogus. And now really one of the good guys, and I hated the trade, and I think Smith is limited as a quarterback, but it has nothing to do with what he is dealing with right now. And what he is dealing with right now is, you know, potentially, especially when you deal with infections and you have that kind of an injury, and when the bone breaks through the skin, when you suffer a broken bone and a broken leg, broken arm, when you have that kind of a compound fracture, it opens it up to other issues and illnesses, or I would say infections, and that's exactly what's happening with Alex Smith right now. And he's had multiple surgeries, had surgery immediately upon getting to the hospital right after the injury happened on the field when he was taken to the hospital. You feel for him and his family as he's dealing with a lot of health issues right now.
Yeah, and you know, all of these complications, you know, are on the table when, not to be as gruesome as possible, but like when your skin breaks and the bone is tearing, like everything now is on the table for, you know, vascular issues, muscle issues, and then infections like this. And then you throw in, you know, we're talking about him from like a football perspective, and he may never get back to being in football shape. You just have to hope now that like his leg is okay for forever. I mean, that's how serious this could be, is that, you know, his leg could be in jeopardy. You just, there's so, like, it's why, thank God that all of these trainers and team doctors and stadiums are equipped to be as quick as they are to these players to help them and get them off the field and to the hospital. I mean, who was the Bears tight end? Zach Miller?
Yes.
That I mean, he almost lost his leg in that horrible injury in New Orleans, but quickness saved him. Obviously, you can't foresee these things. You try to prevent them. It's terrible that Alex Smith is now dealing with them. And as always, his teammates said, I mean, this is just now about you know, his life and his ability to live a regular one the rest of the way. Now the football conversation is for well down the road.
Yeah, we're going to get an update on Alex Smith. Craig Hoffman's going to join us straight ahead. We're going to talk to him. Covers the Washington Redskins for 106.7 The Fan.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Let's talk a little Alex Smith, a little Redskins football. Let's welcome aboard right now Craig Hoffman, Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan. Hey, Craig, Mark Belusis, Andrew Bogus with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Craig. And certainly the news, and how could you not feel for Alex Smith and everything that he's going through right now?
Yeah, it's really scary, frankly. The more you learn, the more that's reported, the more that detail that kind of comes out of what he's going through right now. The exact details aren't public, as far as I've seen, unless something broke overnight that I haven't seen.
It did not.
From all the reporting that was yesterday, it's terrifying because you're not just talking about, you know, someone coming back next season. You're talking about someone coming back at all, or maybe even some more complex complications here. This is a human story more than it is a football story, but there's obviously football implications as well.
Yeah, and it almost feels insensitive to ask this question, Craig, but it almost, you know, reading yesterday and if things are worst case scenario, it's almost as if Washington needs to go into this offseason planning for Alex Smith to not be back as their quarterback and figure out a new long-term plan there.
Yeah, which is horrifically ironic because the whole reason he's here is because they needed a long-term solution at quarterback after 3 years of short-term Kirk Cousins solutions, year after year of the franchise tag. All they ever wanted was some kind of stability of the position. They finally get it with Alex. It doesn't really go as they plan, but it's like, okay, you know what? He's taking the first year to learn the system. He's not playing that well, but he's getting progressively better, and then this happens, which, again, the human side of it is far more important. But now, again, this is a franchise that is looking for long-term stability at the quarterback position, and now they have to do it with Alex's contract probably on the books. Even if he were to retire, they still have to pay pretty much all of the guaranteed money, from what I understand.
Yeah, $71 million, right?
Yeah, there might be some insurance type of things that come in and give them some cap relief, but they're, at the very least for next year, assuming they don't know his long-term prognosis, they're going to have $23.5 million invested in the quarterback position next year between Alex and Colt McCoy, who they signed to an extension in the preseason. So they'll have Colt, which is good. His injury is he's going to be healthy for the offseason. But that obviously is not your long-term solution. You need to find someone else, and you're going to have to do it almost certainly in the draft, because you are looking at so much money already invested in the position.
You know, Craig, I'm curious, when Jay Gruden comes out and says that they expect Smith to make a full recovery in 6 to 8 months, did he know? I mean, And I guess I might be asking a question you don't know the answer to. If you don't, no big deal. But is the latest health issue, is this something that came up in the last couple of days? Or when Jay Gruden made that statement, is that Jay Gruden just trying to be positive?
Yeah, it's I don't know, to be honest. We haven't – they've been very, very private about this. And Alex would like to be very – and his family would like to be very, very private about this. So – I can tell you that Alex's side of things, Alex's camp, is not exactly thrilled that any of this is out, but there's the obvious reason. And it's hard, again, because you know, all of us have so much respect for Alex as a guy. He's a pro's pro, all that kind of stuff, and just one of the best men in the NFL. So you want to respect his privacy, but we also have jobs to do. And as reporters, it's trying to find that balance of, okay, you hear this. Is this something that you have on firm enough ground that you feel comfortable reporting? And is it something that's actually relevant, or are you just being invasive? And along those lines, getting details has been very hard. The best timeline I can guess, and again, this is a guess to put together, is he had an initial surgery that went successfully, and then sometime either a second surgery or something else happened. The infection, the complication happened later. Gotcha. So I think initially there was a successful surgery, and then very soon after you started to hear rumblings like something's not right here, and the timeline starts to get pushed back a little bit, and then obviously we start to learn more and more, and now there is serious concern about what he's going through.
Craig, let's switch to Reuben Foster. His ex-girlfriend spoke to GMA yesterday, and certainly you know, to me, just made the franchise decision to pluck Reuben off of waivers look that much worse. I just don't know. Do they care at this point, or are they still, you know, behind their decision to take this gamble on him that he can get everything together and be on the field next year and somehow be helpful to them?
Yeah, frankly, I don't think they ever cared.
Right.
I think that they made a, and again, as a reporter, I don't feel like it's my job to say whether this is right or wrong. This is just simply what the facts are, and people can judge, you know, based off their morals and values and whatever else, whether it's right or wrong. But they, I think, made a decision early on with whatever information they were able to gather, and how they went about going to get that information, we still don't know. Bruce Allen has not answered any questions. Doug Williams is the only person who has talked from that front office, and that was through Lisa Salter, or sorry, through the interview he did on radio and then had to apologize for. Bruce Allen in a interview with Lisa Salters and then again with Good Morning America basically said, we did our own investigation and they are comfortable with whatever they found. That investigation did not include talking to the alleged victim. It did not include talking to Tampa police. Obviously, they had not heard her side. They had heard Reuben's side and whatever other supporting information is on that side, and that was good enough for them. They, I think, also made the calculated risk that we're willing to take whatever PR hit comes after this because we think he's going to be cleared, and we need linebackers because they need linebackers. And that obviously 30 other teams were not willing to make that risk. That is something that the Redskins decided to do. And I also think they severely underestimated the PR that it was going to generate and the eyes that it was going to generate. And in part because they didn't anticipate Doug Williams going on the radio and making insensitive comments he would have to apologize for. They probably didn't anticipate Reuben Foster's accuser going on the week after this story initially broke and going on national television. So the story has stayed in the news a lot longer. And by the way, the Kareem Hunt story compounds that.
Yeah.
So it winds up being in the news a lot longer, I think, than this team initially planned on.
Craig, do you envision, with what we know now, do you think Reuben Foster suits up and plays for the Redskins?
I don't feel comfortable answering that question only because I don't – like, it's going to depend on the legal charges, and I think that would put me in a position to have to say, like, either he's guilty or not.
Fair.
And I don't know that. So I will answer it this way. If he's cleared of legal charges –
he's going to suit up and play.
I think he's going to suit up and play. If not, then I think not. And by the way, I think he could be cleared of legal charges and still suspended by the NFL a la Zeke Elliott, and they'd be like, oh, well, that's six games. We'll still take it. We don't care about that. When he comes back, we'll deal with it. I think that's kind of where this team is.
You know, Craig, the quarterback scenario, you're now – the Redskins are now with Mark Sanchez, but there were – you know, Gruden addressed it in terms of Colin Kaepernick. How serious – did the Redskins, from your understanding, debate about the possibility of bringing Kaepernick aboard as quarterback?
Not very seriously, in terms of, I don't think it was ever going to get out of the football part of the organization. Like, Jay and the scouts may have discussed it. I think when it ultimately got to ownership level, it would have been vetoed, if I'm being completely honest, knowing the owner of this particular franchise and the way he thinks, politically speaking. And in terms of the actual football side of it, I think it probably was dismissed rather quickly. I think his name probably came up and said, hey, this is a wild card type of player in terms of his skill set, elite runner when we last saw him. And especially, obviously, you think back to his best days, the 180 yards against Green Bay in the playoffs. Is that something we want? Ultimately, they decide no, because they claim they would have had to change too much of their playbook. The validity of those claims, I think, have been heavily debated. I wrote a piece on it for our site. I think there is a very strict language barrier here, and everyone likes to point to the simple, oh, well, he took over for Alex Smith once, and that seemed to work out well. Yes, in a very different offense. Also, did you see Alex Smith play in this offense? It wasn't exactly pretty. So the learning curve in terms of language would have been extraordinarily steep. However, the concepts and things he had run before, it's just learning them. And they thought that Sanchez, with some of the familiarity that he had with Matt Kavanaugh, who was his OC in New York, and Kevin O'Connell, who was his backup in New York, who are now the OC and quarterback's coach respectively here, was going to be a much smoother transition.
Craig, on a much lighter note, I pull up your Twitter bio and it says personal trainer.
Yes.
Is there anything you could suggest for two radio hosts in need of like exercise in the 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern window, yeah, like while we're in a dark, Craig, cold studio? Anything we could do to maybe burn some calories?
I told my wife this last night, Craig, I'm going to go post-holidays, because starting anything kind of life change now, Craig, probably isn't the smartest thing with the holidays upon us. But what's the biggest key from your perspective?
The biggest key is to try to create healthy habits. It is to be fit instead of do fitness, if that makes sense. You have to think of it as, this is something that I'm going to do continuously. And one of the phrases that we use, we borrow from Exos, which you might have heard of in the athletic world. A lot of guys train there, but they also train like regular folks. They're based out in Phoenix. Is that they like to say, create habits that require no extra effort. So try to find things you can do that doesn't really require a whole lot of life change, and one step at a time.
Craig, have you worked out already this morning?
I have not. I have barely gotten out of bed this morning.
Wait, so just a follow-up. Should I or should I not get a bacon, egg, and cheese on the way home today?
I mean, if it makes you feel good, yeah, just go for it. There's a great chance I have a bacon, egg, and cheese today. And especially you guys up in New York, the bacon, egg, and cheese you can get there compared to what I got to deal with here is different game.
Yeah.
But you can still enjoy yourself, because if it's torturous, like, no one's ever going to be successful with it.
Craig, do you eat clean 6 days a week?
I eat generally clean except for when I don't feel like it. Like 80-20 rule. 80% good, 20%. Whatever I feel like. That's like
so
bacon.
So much better
and
the other way.
And cheese.
Oh, there you
20,
go.
20-80 is much better.
Craig, we got to get you on a sponsored spot each and every week to give us a health update, all right?
Done. I can do that. This is within my skill set, and I get money. Sign me up.
Craig Hoffman, 106.7, covers the Redskins. Hey, Craig, we appreciate it, brother. Thanks for the chat this morning. Have yourself a good Friday and great weekend, all right?
Thanks, Kaz. Hopefully talk to you soon.
You got it. That's a great job. That's a good job that you both. I'm sure he's about to go work
out. Do some leg lifts.
He's about to go work out. There's no
doubt
about
it. How heavy is this microphone?
One, we come back. We'll run around the National Football League, talk about all the Week 14 matchups. We'll do that next. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.